Hello, I'm Ronnie Floyd, Senior Pastor of Cross Church. Thank you for tuning in today. Cross Church is a faith family that is passionate about sharing the love of Christ with the people of Northwest Arkansas, Southwest Missouri, America, and even the world. I thank you again for tuning in today. And please know that the entire Cross Church congregation and I invite you to join us in person at one of our 5 regional campuses. Come and be a part of our friendly, compassionate faith family. Go to crosschurch.com to learn more information about our fellowship of believers.
Raise your hand if you've been to Branson, Missouri. I'm going to ask it another way. Raise your hand if you've been to Branson, Missouri this year. On behalf of the Chamber of Commerce, I thank you. And we invite you back. I'd like to get to know you a little bit. If you've been married for more than 25 years, more than 25 years in a row, would you please stand? More than 25 years and remain standing. More than 25 years. Stay standing, stay standing. If you've been married for more than 30, stay standing. The rest of you may be seated. More than 35, stay standing. The rest of you may be seated. More than 40, are you doing math? Is that what's happening down there? You're doing math? More than 40, stay standing. The rest may be seated. More than 50, we're just going to jump to 50. More than 50, gentleman just asked his wife, what'd he say? More than 50, stay standing. Wow. Hey, give them a hand. More than 50 years. Let's keep going. More than 55, stay standing. The rest of you may be seated. Do we have anybody more than 60 years married? Stay standing. The rest of you may be seated. Look at this. How long have y'all been married? 64? 66 years. You have a seat. You just go ahead and have a seat. You have earned a seat. 66, how about back there? How many years? 65. Can anybody beat 66? Let's hear it for 66 years of marriage. I should give you free show tickets to Branson or something. You've earned something. If you've been married for less than 25, would you stand? Less than 25. You will notice that no one applauds for you. You've done nothing. Stay standing, less than 25. Less than 20, stay standing. The rest of you may be seated. You've been married less than 15. I'd like you to remain standing. The rest may be seated. Less than 10 years married. Less than 5. Less than 3. Less than 1. You've been married less than a year. Stay standing. You got married yesterday. Would you remain stand? No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. Been married less than 6 months. Stay standing. Less than 3. Less than 2. How long have y'all been married? 2 weeks? Can you beat 2 weeks? 1 week? That's what we had at Springdale, too. You have anything you'd like to share with them? Have you learned anything the last week? You have a week on them. All right, give it. Did anybody seriously get married yesterday? Let me just see. Hey, Springdale had a couple married last week. You know, you guys are in love, aren't you? Now look at it. She's holding both his hand and his arm. You guys know why you love each other so much? Because you don't know each other. That's what I'm just saying right now. Let's hear it for 1 week and 66 years. So we have covered it in this place. Well, I want to talk to you today about enjoying life and marriage, and as I do that, I'll share a lot about my family and how much I enjoy marriage and how much I enjoy my family. I'll start by showing you a picture of the queen of our home. This is our queen, Amy. I remember meeting her over 20 years ago. We will celebrate our 20th anniversary in October. We met at Liberty University on a blind date. On the blind date, first date, I looked at my buddy and said, I'm marrying this woman. And he looked at me and said, you can't decide that. Well, I already did. And then I went back to Fremont, Nebraska to ask her dad for permission to marry her. And she has a 6'2", full-blooded Norwegian father who's pretty much a Viking. You got to see this guy. He's intimidating. I walked right into the kitchen. I said, "Mr. Freetag, may I have permission to marry your daughter?" To which he responded in his thick Norwegian accent, "You betcha." And I said, "But only under one condition." I had just completed Liberty. Amy had 1 year left. I said, "I'll only marry her between her junior and senior year if you allow me to pay for her senior year of college." To which he said, "You betcha." We got married at 22 and 21. I always love sharing our story because I get a lot of young guys that'll come up to me, especially on college campuses, and they'll be like, "Bro, how'd you get married at 22 and 21? How'd you afford to get married at 22 and 21? How'd you afford to be able to pay for her senior year of college?" I said, "It's this thing called a job. I had more than one." And he'll be like, "I can't afford to get married." I say, "Bro, I would believe that if you weren't holding a venti caramel macchiato in your right hand and an iPhone 6 Plus in your left. You need to start thinking Folgers and flip phones, bro. And you can get married more than you think. You haven't started marriage until you start with your parents' hand-me-down mattress. Can I get an amen? You know what I'm talking about, the dip already built in. You get in at night, you roll to the center. That's a good marriage. That's a great marriage. Used furniture, Ethan Allen, no. Home Depot, cinder block, 1x12. This is how you start marriage. Used cars. But it's more than possible. After we got married, we were married a few years, we decided we were missing something. So 13 years ago last week, we had our daughter, Corinne May, and Corinne is my princess. I remember when she was 5, I told her, I said, "Listen, there's only one queen in this house, and you ain't her." And she looked at me with those eyes that said, "We'll see. You're a big talker." She's our pioneer woman. She's our old soul. She's the outdoors. She loves critters and everything about nature. And she doesn't just knit and weave. She likes to raise the animals to where she can get the fur off of them herself and spin. I mean, she's just passionate about the outdoor. This is her friend Sugar. This is Joe White from Kanakuk, raised this little fawn. And Corinne would love to go over to his front porch and just let Sugar nibble on her neck a little bit and have fun. And 2 years later, we had my son. My son, he loves deer too. This is Carson. Oh, put that one back up there. See, yeah, and I know I'm safe in Northwest Arkansas showing this. This is our first deer. I've never hunted. I grew up in a fishing family, and November, Joe took Carson and I hunting for the very first time in Oklahoma, and we were in a blind about a half mile from Joe and his grandson. And Carson and I are in a stand, and this 11-point buck comes walking out of the woods. And I mean, I was like this. Hunters know what I'm talking about. You do, something starts happening. Adrenaline starts rushing. I've never gotten a deer before, and I'm just shaking. And I'm thinking to myself, you probably shouldn't be handling a firearm when you're like this. That's kind of what I'm thinking, right? But I was all shaky. Carson drops the deer. We go down a few minutes later, and he's there. We're having a father-son moment like we've never had. We're celebrating life together. And I'm kind of dancing around because I don't have a clue what to do with the deer now that you got this deer laying by the creek. Carson even says, Dad, what do we do? I'm like, I don't know. But I think, according to the movie Red Dawn, you got to take a bite out of its heart. While I yell, Wolverine! So I think that's how that goes. But this is my family. And in Branson, Missouri, years ago, we started a ministry called To Ignite, and every second Sunday of the month, for 6.5 years, we talked about marriage. And today I want to share with you the 3 key passages that can lead you and your spouse, can lead you if you're single, because I have just as much passion for the singles in this room, that they would understand healthy relationship formation principles and milestones. That if you would allow these 3 to guide you, you can truly enjoy life and marriage. You don't have to choose between the two. So we're going to start with Hebrews 13:4 as we look at this big idea of esteeming marriage as highly valuable. Hebrews 13:4 says this, "Marriage should be honored by all and the marriage bed kept pure." Now, I grew up in an independent, fundamental, premillennial, King James Version only Baptist church. Okay, I grew up in a very conservative church. I grew up in a very conservative home. I grew up in a home that taught me how to honor purity, but I don't know how well I learned to honor marriage. In youth group, I would hear the message, no, wait, quit, don't, stop it. Good theology, okay? But no one ever was constantly painting a beautiful picture of marriage for me, saying it's a good thing, it's a great, something you should look forward to, something you should enjoy. I remember at 22 walking out in the La Quinta parking lot on the day of my wedding, and you know what La Quinta means? La Quinta means next to Denny's. And so we're walking out of the parking lot, going to Denny's, and my father, 50-year-old father, engineer, he looks at me and he says, son, do you have any questions? I'm like, Dad, I gotta be honest with you, I think it's a little too late. I'm 22, I've learned a lot, but marriage should be honored by all, the marriage bed kept pure, and here was the message I got. This is as far as I'm gonna go with this, so if you have young ears in here, don't stress, don't worry about where this may be heading, don't do this because they need to hear this, but the message I got on Hebrews 13:4 growing up went something like this. Sex is dirty, nasty, and ugly, and you should save it for the one you love. I'm gonna let that sink in for just a second. Because some of you heard the same message. Some of you grew up maybe in a church or a home that never talked about intimacy. They never discussed it, and they just hoped you would figure it out one day. But we got to get back to a place where we don't just let the headliner in the church and the headliner with our young people be purity, but alongside purity, we need the headliner to be marriage. Esteeming marriage is highly valuable, because what are you going to do when your 13-year-old comes home and says, Mom, I'm in love? You're like, well, I've already got that speech planned. It goes something like this. You're not in love. You don't know what love is. Love is what your father and I have. She says, yeah, I don't want that. That ain't what I'm looking for. And honestly, I'm just going to tell you what your 13-year-old's thinking. I'm just going to share. Your 13-year-old's thinking, what I'm feeling, what I'm experiencing, I don't know if I've ever seen in you and Dad. We got to get back to the place where we're reminded that historically and biblically, there's two seasons of life, childhood and adulthood. I love the parents that freak out when their child is starting to become an adult, and we call it the adolescent stage, and they become preteens with their own ideas, own thoughts, own opinions on the way they dress and on the friends they choose. And it's when they start to push away from mom and dad, they begin to individualize and separate, that we start to freak out. And we want to tell them things like a 13-year-old daughter coming to me going, Dad, I think I'm in love. Here's my response. You're not in love. What's his name? His name's Kyle. Let me tell you about Kyle. Kyle is of his father, the devil, and a child of darkness. You stay away from Kyle. Kyle is evil. How many dads know what I'm talking about? Yeah, no. See, there's a better way, and a better way is to picture a special future. To begin esteeming marriage is highly valuable. When your kindergartner comes out and says, I think this boy likes me, say, well, you want me to help you work on a budget? We can work, go look at places today. We can see how this thing pans out. I think we've gotten to a place, though, with honoring purity and not marriage, that our young people are just pushing marriage off altogether. The average age for men now to marry the first time is 29, and for women it's 27. They're saying, the longer I wait, the better it will be. We need to get back to a place where we begin not just celebrating marriage with a wedding, but where as a church to honor marriage, we actually prioritize it. We promote it. We tell young people it's a good thing. Think about this. For most all history, there have been 5 milestones of adulthood, and they've been the same in every generation. 66 years married, these are your 5 milestones. 1 week married, these are your 5 milestones, and here they are. Leave home, finish school, get a job, get married, start a family. Those are the 5 milestones that have been the same in every generation. The difference between your generation and my generation and your generation and the generation I'm raising is 66 years married. Your generation completed those 5 milestones in a very short period of time, if not in the same week. It was fast because your parents gave you responsibility. And we have this issue today in honoring marriage that we really need to think through, and it's called prolonged adolescence. Prolonged adolescence, if you talk to business owners in here, they're going to go, I deal with it every single day. Prolonged adolescence defined as too much privilege, not enough responsibility. And we've got to get back to a place where we start teaching our kids the responsibility necessary, not just for work, but for marriage and for relationships. We need to get back to where we're actually promoting it to our young people as we picture a special future. But young people are telling me, I don't want to get married because I don't feel ready. But I look at a lot of couples in here that were married 50 years, and most of them will tell you they were not mature when they married. They got married and grew up together. Some of you are like, the hardest part of marriage, Ted, is we got married. We both were immature. I grew up and my spouse did not look straight ahead. Okay, look straight ahead on that one. This is not participatory with your spouse this morning. You're like, that's difficult, that's painful. And one of the things I discovered as a pastor in working with 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds with a marriage in crisis, I sometimes will be the very first person in their lives that invited them to adulthood. I'm the first one that says, the problem we're having here is you don't make enough money to be spending money on yourself. With a wife and children, now you have to take responsibility for someone other than yourself. And I want to be the first to say to you, you got this. You can do this. You can grow up together. You don't have to find someone new. But young people are saying, I don't feel prepared, and I'm going to wait until I am prepared until I get married. And there's a Hebrew term for that. The Hebrew term is in the Greek, it's baloney. I believe it's an unnecessary delay. I believe you can choose through commitment and the power of commitment to marry in your early mid-20s and have a very successful marriage if you begin to prioritize honoring marriage, esteeming marriage as highly valuable. So young people tell me they're not ready to get married, but here's another reason I get. They tell me, I think my parents, the reason they don't have a good marriage is because they got married when they were young. So young people today are afraid they'll end up with a marriage like their parents. And that's what I want to share. The one, I think this is the most left out part of marriage ministry and marriage messaging in the church today. And it's this simple idea of enjoying marriage. It's found in Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is a very dark, pessimistic book. Very much fits my personality. If you want to pick me up tomorrow morning in your quiet time, start with Ecclesiastes. Because here are the bookends of Ecclesiastes. Chapter 1, life is hard. Chapter 12, then you die. Okay, that will lift your spirits as you head to work on Monday. But in the middle of this book, you get this nugget. In the middle of life is hard and then you die, you get this. Go, chapter 9, verse 7 through 9. Go, eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for now God favors what you do. Always be clothed in white and always anoint your head with oil. And the scripture there is speaking about enjoying life, but not just enjoying life, joy and festivity. As a follower of Jesus, your life should be marked by joy. As a follower of Jesus, you should be festive as you go through life. But life is tough. We all know this. That's what I love about verse 9. Verse 9 says this, endure life with your wife all your miserable days. See, if it wasn't on the screen, if you didn't have Bibles open, I love sharing that at churches when I misquote it like that, and I'll get a few, that's good. And here's the message we got on Ecclesiastes 9:9. God gave you your spouse to beat you down and to suck the life out of you so you can be more like Jesus. This is the message that we take away. But the scripture says, under the sun, all your meaningless days. This is your lot in life and in your toilsome. The word toilsome there, same word we find in Genesis. It means grueling. Your labor under the sun is difficult. It's painful. Psalm 90 in verse 10 says, 70 years you have upon this earth, 80 if you're strong. Those years are filled with sorrow and anguish, meaning making a living is challenging. Raising a family is difficult. Life can be painful. But in the midst of this, you can choose to enjoy life together. Guys, I'm here to tell you today, you don't need to choose between life and a wife. You can have both at the same time. There are guys that come in here and they're like, no, I think I would have been happier with the one I was in high school with. And you're thinking of that philosopher, Garth Brooks, who sang the song just the other night at a hometown football game. My wife and I ran into my old high school flame. And as I introduced them, the past came back to me and I couldn't help but think of the way things used to be. You didn't run into her at the high school football game, but you've been checking out her Facebook page. You're wondering, how's she doing? I'm wondering if she's happy, because I think I would have been happier. I would have enjoyed life more if I would have been with her. And say the Hebrew term with me, ha! Because some are going, did I marry the right person? Did I marry the right person? I love how Pastor John Piper says it. If you want to know the answer to that question, just look at the name on your wedding license. The one you decided to marry. I tell this to guys in Branson all the time. I think if it works in Branson, Missouri, the Ozarks there, it'll work here. And I tell them this, guys, stop looking for greener grass. Where the grass is greener, there is a septic leak. It I love rural communities. It's nasty. Stay home and water your own lawn. For a good time, call home. You don't have to choose between life and life. We're obsessed with this idea of compatibility today. You turn on the commercials that are geared towards singles, but I want you for a second to think about the married man or woman watching eHarmony.com, Match.com, and for us in our area, FarmersOnly.com. You don't have to be lonely anymore. You just need a farm boy, right? And we see these commercials. And if you met online, that's great. And there's nothing wrong with meeting online. It's what you do after you meet, because compatibility is never going to be found online. Can't do it. Compatibility is not something to be discovered. You can't test for it. And an algorithm will never work out compatibility. According to the scripture, compatibility is something you create, not something you find. Compatibility is something you make. It's not something you just sit around hoping for. Bottom line with Ecclesiastes 9:9 is this: enjoying marriage is a choice, not an outcome. You don't sit around and wait for all the bills to be paid and lined right, and let's get out from underneath this bankruptcy or this upside-down mortgage. Let's get the kids through this season of life. Let's just take care of all this. Once all of that happens, hopefully joy in marriage will find us. That's not how it works. In the midst of your toilsome labor under the sun, make the decision to enjoy life together. Make the decision. Amy and I had to make this decision. When we first married, we're like many of you in here, if not all of you in here, when early in our marriage, just over little things, it was, Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Just errands, little decisions that need to be made. Hey, where do you want to eat dinner tonight? I don't care. How about Olive Garden? Not really feeling Italian. You said you don't care. And it was just nothing left. We'd give everything to everyone else and at work and in all of our ministry pursuits and nothing left. And we just decided a few years ago, this is ridiculous. It's easy to find the things and to focus on the things in marriage that irritate you, that wear you out, that are pet peeves. But what if we choose to enjoy life with everything that's potentially frustrating? What if we just simply make that decision to enjoy life with each other in the midst of our toilsome labor? What if we decide to find just one thing, not everything, one thing that drives us crazy about each other and we can't seem to get along in? And let's find ways to enjoy that. And I'll give you an example. Years ago, I finally had to sit Amy down. I want every lady in here to listen to this. This is very important. This will set you free in Jesus if you grab this one point. I told my wife, I said, there's not a lot of adventure left for men in the world anymore. So please let me find my own parking space. I want to do it all by myself. I want to provide this for my family. Say I did it. Because she would point out three spaces in, and I would drive past her spot, go 20 spaces down. And this is in a parking lot over a parking space. This is how stupid it gets. And I just sit there all bowed up like, yeah, I showed you. Oh, we're going to walk. Yeah, and we're going to hold hands while we go in there so everybody knows we have a happy marriage. But this is how it is. But, you know, and you get to that place in your marriage, you know one another's script well enough. You don't even have to finish their sentence. They don't even have to finish their sentence. They don't have to say a word because you know what they're thinking. You know what's going on deep down. And she would just look at me with those eyes that said, you stubborn, stubborn man. And off we'd go in for a relaxing time shopping. That was one of the first ones we started with. We said, this is ridiculous. Let's figure out how to have fun in a parking lot. I, as your husband, am going to make it my goal. I am going to decide to enjoy the parking lot situation, and we're going to work it out. But can I tell you something? My wife did a better job making the decision to enjoy the parking lot situation than I did, because now, true story, we pull into a parking lot. I pull still past her third space in, because I told her, the way God set it up, you even look at a spot, it automatically disqualifies that spot. I can't change the laws God put in place. But I'll drive 20 spaces down. Ladies, don't ask me to explain it. I can't, but something does feel good about finding my own space and getting it. And I pull in, but you know what my wife does now? This is how we enjoy life. Now when I pull into the space I found, She leans over and she starts massaging my bicep. And she'll say, "You did this all by yourself." Do you do this when I'm not with you? All the time. You know what I caught her doing a couple years ago? She knows those Andy's candies at the end of an Olive Garden meal are like crack to me. I love those Andy's candies, I gotta be honest with you. She bought a bag of them, and she keeps them in her purse now for when I do something good. And it was in a parking lot that she handed me my first one, and I ripped it out of her hand, and I'm opening it up, and I realize, my wife just gave me a treat. She is rewarding my good behavior. I am a talk. I was all right with it. I opened it up, and I enjoyed it. You can do that. Like, Ted, we're too different. Compatibility doesn't work. Oh, yes, you can. You have to choose. How many of you married someone who has a crazy family? Would you raise your hand? Yeah. How many of you have a crazy family? Would you raise your hand? There's the problem. Because here's what happened. We got married. My wife grew up in a home, all right? She grew up AG, so she's been set free in Jesus, right? I grew up independent, fundamental, premillennial, King James Version only. I have a guilt-prone nature. I see all signs on the road as laws to be followed. You break one, you go to jail. That's how it works, right? You follow the signs on the road. She sees all signs as suggestions for other people. I grew up home that taught savings was money you put away for a rainy day. She learned that savings was the difference between the actual price and the sale price. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Creates conflict. She grew up in a home at Christmas time that decorating for Christmas meant a tree in every room, garland over every door, lights everywhere. Major decoration. I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't know this would happen. I grew up in a home where we decorated for Christmas on a commercial break. On a commercial break, my dad would go over to the crawl space with a 3-foot pre-decorated tree with a garbage bag over it and put it on the dehumidifier. We'd pull the bag off. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. So you can imagine, by the time I get the 46 box down out of the attic that says Christmas decor, I'm in no mood to celebrate the birth of my Lord and Savior. I'm ticked. Carson will be like, "Hey, look at this ornament I made last year, Dad. Put it on the tree." What? Why is that in me? Well, it's what I grew up with. It's the messages written on my heart, but you can find ways to have fun with it. You can enjoy one another. Driving in the car, a lot of our stories are in cars. But my wife used to think that I was an expert in every subject. Any guy know what I mean? She asks you questions about things you have no idea, right, and expects you to have an answer. This happens all the time. We'd drive through construction zones, and Amy would say, "Hey, babe, what are they doing right here?" I have no idea. I wasn't involved in any of the meetings on this project. And that used to just irritate me. Like, I don't know what to say. Why would I even answer that? But now, how can I enjoy that? How can I have fun with that? Now, when Amy says, "Hey, babe," through a construction zone, "what are they doing here?" I turn into the construction foreman. I told him, "Rip it up, boys! We're going 12 lanes, not 6. I want 6-inch corrugated pipe." Hey, you can roll down the window, talk to the guys as you drive by like you're in charge. Have fun with it. See, I want my kids witnessing every day their mom and dad having fun. I want my kids to be able to look at mom and dad going through challenges, going through difficulties, going through the same grueling labor that you go through. The same toilsome labor and life issues that every single one of us in here goes through. I want them to see us tackle that as a team, not as opponents. I want them to go, "Wow, mom and dad have fun, even when life is a challenge." And that leads us to the very last point. That's the idea of prioritizing marriage, and that's eradicating the kid-centered home. You honor marriage, you esteem it as highly valuable, you enjoy marriage, enjoying life together, and now you prioritize marriage. Genesis 2:24 says this, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother." And stop right there, because often when we read Genesis 2:24, we see it as a marriage verse, but we need to see the first half of it as a parenting verse. It says, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother." In other words, it's my responsibility to make sure my children leave home as adults, not on a journey to become one. It's not the college, it's not the professor, it's not the first employer, it's not their job to turn my child into an adult. That's my job. That's my responsibility. Because for this reason, Carson's going to leave one day as a potential husband, and Corinne's going to leave as a potential wife. And it's for this reason they'll be united, and they will become one flesh. You become one flesh with your spouse. That's the biblical definition of compatibility. Two becoming one, not two finding one. Not two stumbling into it or getting matched into one. No, you make the decision to become compatible. You don't wait for it. You choose to work through differences and enjoy and esteem marriage as highly valuable. I love sharing this verse with my kids, and you can ask my kids, what's your dad's definition of maturity according to Genesis 2:24? And my son will say, I will not be with mom and dad forever, so plan accordingly. That's right. I love you, but you're not going to be here forever. According to Genesis 2:24, the bond between a husband and wife is glue-like. The bond between a husband and wife is to be stronger than the bond between a parent and a child. You are eventually to send your child out. And I tell my kids all the time, I love you. You're a welcomed addition to this home, but we got big plans for when you leave. And they'll say, well, what are you going to do? Well, first of all, we're going to Disney World. We're going to reward ourselves for raising you children. But that's the goal. And I want you to know this. Your children, they watch everything you do, they hear everything you say, and then they repeat. Amen. They will repeat. They have a front row seat to your marriage, even if it's in the back row of the minivan. It's a front row seat to your marriage. They listen, they see, and then they repeat. My son and I, we love watching YouTube clips together. It's one of our favorite things to do. And his favorite YouTube clip, if you get a chance, go onto the YouTube and type in German Coast Guard. The German Coast Guard, guys being trained day one on the German Coast Guard. It's a 30-second clip. Mayday, mayday, we are sinking, we are sinking. Hello. This is the German Coast Guard. Mayday, mayday, we are sinking, we are sinking. What are you sinking about? Thinks that's the funniest thing he's ever heard. Falls over in laughter. A few weeks later, we're driving down the road. And I had a hymn in my heart, a hymn in my head, and I'm singing an old hymn from my childhood that goes like this. I was sinking deep in sin, far from the peaceful shore. And from the back seat I heard, hey, what were you sinking about? And I looked at Amy and said, our kids hear everything, they see everything, they forget nothing. And then they repeat. Can I ask you a question? Do you have a marriage worth repeating? Do you, with your marriage, for your children and your grandchildren, paint a beautiful picture of a couple enjoying life together? Are you ready to esteem marriage as highly valuable, to enjoy life together, and then eradicate the kid-centered home? I told my daughter years ago, when I'm going to stand at the back of a church one day looking down the aisle at some guy, I'm not taking you down that aisle till I know he loves you as much as me. Corinne May, you'll never be my queen, but you're my princess. And what that means is, and please don't overlook this as one of your priority parenting tools, Dad. It's one of your priority parenting tools. I told Corinne, I said, I want to show you to the best of my ability every day how a queen should be treated. Don't overlook your marriage as a great gift to your children. Don't overlook the priority of marriage in the home and understand kids won't be with you forever. That's why we prioritize date night. We prioritize time away. It's a gift for us, but it's also a gift for our kids. We want them to say, Mom and Dad have a good thing, and we want that. So I'm going to just ask you one more time. Are you ready to esteem marriage as highly valuable, enjoy marriage together, and eradicate the kid-centered home? And I'm going to ask it in a William Wallace-type voice. Will you run or will you fight? You can answer that. Go ahead. Fight. I think he wants us to say fight. Let's do it again. Will you run or will you fight? And there's a preschool mom going, we will run. He's not talking to us. He's talking to people with older kids. No, I'm talking to the preschool parent. Can I see anybody raising preschoolers? Anybody out there raising preschool kids? You got preschoolers? Okay, here's what you got to do. This is your application. This is your invitation moment. You do not leave here today without talking to that couple who's been married 66 years. Because they're going to help you eradicate the kid-centered home. You know why? Because you got antibacterial product hanging all over your purse, okay? 66 years married. She let her kids pick up cigarette butts. Chew on them a little bit. And she walked on going, no big deal. Didn't bother. He used to let his kids on long trips sleep in the back window of the car. Now you strap them in like they're going to outer space, right? Here we go. All right. Oh, 12 hours? I can do this for 12 hours. Yeah, here we go. You know what they used to do? Their evil generation had a playpen. They put three kids in the playpen with only one toy. It's where we got the idea for cage fighting. And when the kids messed up, they took the kids out of the playpen, they turned the playpen upside down and put it on top of them. And look, they're loving it back there. We sure did, and our kids turned out well, didn't they, honey? Yeah. 66 years. Raise your hand if you've ever taken a drink out of a garden hose. We're fine. We're fine. Raise your hand if you've ever been shot by a BB gun. Yeah, I'm in Arkansas now. Yeah, you want to lower the crime rate? You need to let your kids start shooting each other with BB guns again. That's just my... I promised Pastor Floyd I wouldn't get political. That was my only political... Anyway, those were good days. Weren't those good days? See, oh, they're going, mm-hmm. You young punks, get back to that. We'll have some revival in this country. How many of you remember when your dad couldn't figure out which of your siblings was at fault, so he just spanked all of you? Raise your hand. Yes, and we're better for it. How many of you remember when your mom spanked you with whatever she had handy? Yes, those were good days. Oh, are you writing any of this down? This is really... Oh, those were good days. How many of you remember when the dog became too much to handle and your dad told you the dog ran away? Anybody remember those days? Yeah. How many of you remember when your dad used to help you build a ramp to jump your bike over the ditch? No helmet, no pads. And you'd crash and your dad be like, hey, way to go, son. Good job. He didn't give you suggestions to go higher and longer. I mean, these were the days. Oh, these were good days. How many of you remember when you used to be able to sign your kid up for sports without committing them to tournaments in Beijing? We took our kid into karate and taekwondo. The master comes over and goes, well, good news, we're going to the world championships in Italy. I'm like, I don't think so. He's like, well, why not? I go, well, I've never been to Italy. And the first time I go to Italy will be with my wife, not my son's dojo. So I'm going to ask it again. If you're ready to esteem marriage as highly valuable, eradicate the kid-centered home, and enjoy life together, will you run or will you fight? One more time. Will you run or will you fight? Thank you, Cross Church. It's been great being with you this morning. God's blessings on your marriage.